Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my co-host, my friend Parker Fleming. Parker, we are less than a month away from TCU football as we record this.
We are. It's getting a little closer every day, like I always say. And yeah, I mean, just we were just talking a little bit of planning before we got on air, and you know, the weeks stack up, and we're going to be playing a football game pretty soon here, and not an FCS opener. We're going to play meaningful football, granted, on a Friday night in a Pac-12 town, but still meaningful football soon.
I'll be at that game. You will too, I think. It'll be another roadshow for the Purple Theory Podcast.
I will. I don't want to make any promises I don't want to disclose my whereabouts to listeners or anything, but yeah, we're going to have some fun and head down to Boulder. So that's going to be great.
That's going to be a good time. We are in the point of the calendar now where a lot of weird things start happening. Oklahoma lost an assistant coach, and we're two guys that probably shouldn't be making jokes about it, but goodbye, Cale Gundy.
Yeah, I don't want to go conspiracy theorist, and I'm not. But very clearly, there's some like political dynamics, tectonic plate shifting at Oklahoma that they're working out. And this incident happened kind of in the fire pit. Not like, oh, Cale Gundy was framed. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying there was just a lot of pressures and kind of under the surface movements. And this allowed a lot of them to kind of volcano style burst through. Yeah, not great.
Not great.
He's going to be an assistant at Oklahoma State and help their wide receiver room a whole lot.
Yeah, so, and hopefully
that's going to be the football fallout, I guess.
And hopefully Oklahoma doesn't poach Malcolm Kelly next year, although we've heard that TCU is going to do everything they can to take care of him, but we shall see. Speaking of TCU, Parker, first off, I should have said this off front. This is Texas Preview Week, so we're going to spend a lot of time on this episode on that, but we do want to spend a little bit on the TCU Horned Frogs, because reports out of camp, you know, Parker, I know you have your rumor mill, things you're hearing. The boys are playing hard. They're ready to hit someone in a different uniform. But TCU, I think, has a definite quarterback battle on its hands at this point.
Yeah, and every time I think I've got a little bit of a tea leaf one direction or the other, I think there's a new wrinkle that kind of comes in. Grant, before I even say anything, who takes the first snap, in your estimation, based on what we know right now?
I mean, if you ask legitimately, I think there's a chance we run some like BS trick play and Darius Davis takes the first snap. But like, as
we're
far as
run me, the wild frog on play one under Saeed.
I swear to God, we did that one year. I swear to God, we did.
Well, the worst one for me, the most egregious one, was when Max Duggan was disciplined and couldn't play the first half of the Iowa State game.
Uh-huh.
And they ran Matt Downing, and they ran like a designed Matt Downing run on the first day of the season.
It was a different time.
Was it last year Zach Evans couldn't play the first season because some kind of or the first series because some kind of
disciplinary infraction. None of those people are TCU players anymore. I think Chandler takes the first snap.
I'm leaning towards that. I think that they talked about separation this week and needing separation. And Duggan had a couple good throws, but I think some of that is they are installing the offense to where there's some more wrinkles and they're getting to flex some more of those throws and everything. Mm-hmm. And then two, Chandler Morris ran with the ones twice in a row. I really had warmed the idea because there wasn't clear separation in spring that they were going to start Max. But I think if Chandler can take the job here, one, that's better that they don't have to switch in season and that there's a clear number one. Two, Grant, looking at that quote today, that clip that Sonny Dykes had, here's my question. Does the man like the quarterbacks that he has on his roster right now?
Sonny Dykes loves all of his children equally. And by that, he means no, he does not like them.
He was like, I've always believed that if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. But this year we have two quarterbacks.
Two and a half. I mean, Sam Jackson, the future.
We're going to talk about who's going to play quarterback for TCU in 2023 later in this podcast. It's just going to be a natural segment.
No, Parker's going to talk about that. I'm going to deny its existence. We are not going to do that. I don't want
it. The only other thing from spring camp I think I want to mention Marcel Brooks being out is a real bummer. I think 3-5, he was going to be an interesting character there. Good to see Spivey getting involved.
Yep.
Good to see that they're working a lot on plays that are other than throw it up to Quentin Johnston, because I think throw it up to Quentin Johnston is a staple, right? Like, that's gospel. You have that. The problem last year is they had nothing else. So if they have some other stuff, I think that's really, really good, getting some of those other guys involved. And then lastly, there was one more thing about Spring. Oh, did you see the clip of Sam Jackson just roasting Chandler Morris about being from Highland Park?
I did see that.
It was short. We had to infer a lot, but I enjoyed it.
I like that he's feisty. I think, too, we've heard some semi-encouraging things about the defensive line, at least that they're not getting – they don't look terrible. And there's some interesting guys rotating in, so at least there's that.
The official player – every year we adopt a player, Grant. We didn't talk about this. We're doing it live on air. It's Dominic Williams, the
most
tackle, the freshman. As he goes, the TCU defense will go, and I think he's going to go a lot farther than a lot of people think. Big boy in the middle, gonna not be huge on the stat sheet, but if that man is clogging up the both A gaps, he's doing his job. So that'll be a big deal.
He's at least another warm body up front that is not. Well, I don't want to bury anybody, but is not the warm bodies that we had last year. So I'm totally
does not have an explicit history of giving up 50-yard runs every time he's on the field. Yes,
that is correct. Yeah. Parker, we should start talking because we have a lot of Twitter comments and we have a lot of things to say about the Texas Longhorns. And I guess we have one more final thing to do, which is that I should mention that Texas is now officially the number 18 Texas Longhorns because the coaches poll came out last week or earlier this week. It doesn't matter. Time is a flat circle. I don't care about the coaches poll. It doesn't mean anything. It's funny a lot of the time. Jeff Traylor had to come out and say that he didn't vote for Texas as number one to UTSA's schedule, a real thing that apparently didn't happen. But you have some thoughts on the coaches poll.
Well, yeah, I don't remember now, but I feel like there was some nonsense about Gary Patterson, like, abstained in either 2014 or 2010 when he was a voter. And there was some nonsense where it's like some coaches are playing it like a fiddle and others aren't. But I guess it would have been 2010 because, or 2009 rather, because, the coaches poll mattered for the BCS. It doesn't matter anymore in that sense. But it's kind of becoming a meme and becoming laughable. It's filled out by staffers. Coaches obviously aren't watching games. They're not aggregating information. It's filled out by, you know, some associate assistant to the director of athletic director. And I think the big thing about polls, especially ones that are reported as widely as like the coaches poll are, is that college football is still a game of narratives because you have an incomplete set of pairwise comparisons. Not everybody plays everybody and not everybody overlaps meaningfully with a majority of other college football teams or even a plurality of other college football teams. And so these kind of shape the narratives, especially the AP poll early on has a direct, even if it's a backdoor effect, has a direct effect on the college football playoff because it determines which matchups are the most important, which ones get the ESPN and media coverage, which ones kind of determine what the story of the season is. And when you come down to it, numbers aside, what really shapes who gets invited to the college football playoff is stories. And those polls shape our time and attention. We live in an attention economy. And so I want to live in a world where the polls actually don't matter, but they really do have a tangible effect on the big picture narratives of college football, because there are so many points where arbitrary selection is shaped by what people perceive, and these shape what people perceive.
Yeah, well, listen, regardless, we'll figure it out when they play on the field. Texas is going to drop out of the coaches and AP poll immediately once they get gobsmacked by Alabama in the second week, so who cares? Let's talk about Texas. So a lot of turnover. It's not even quite the same team, I don't think, as it was last year in a lot of different ways, especially at the quarterback position, because while Hudson Card may be there, Quinn Ewers is in town, and there's a lot of turnover up and down the roster. So, Parker, tell us about the Texas Longhorns going into 2022.
Grant, I'm disappointed. We didn't talk about this or rehearse this at all, but I thought we were going to do a Gary P. Nunn, what I like about Texas bit there, and we just kind of dove into the football. Feels very uncharacteristic of us.
I could come up with a Gary P. Nunn lyric. It's for Gary Patterson. It's adios amigo. You just crossed over the line. Please don't be wasting my time. There you go. That's your Texas lyric.
The 2021 Texas Longhorns were back until they weren't, which could apply for a lot of weeks. And Grant, I'll say right now, let's commit. That's going to be, I'll give you one. That was my one. One Texas is back joke. Because okay. We're trying to do these previews like we do for every team. We're going to talk ourselves into Texas this week. We're going to be better consumers of football content by understanding the ins and outs of a team. So I won't make another Texas is back joke. That's great. The 2021 Texas Longhorns into the season 5-7. They started out 4-1. Three of those four wins came by double digits. Rice, Texas Tech, Louisiana. Texas Tech and Louisiana at the time were pretty decent wins. Texas Tech had beaten Houston coming in. The numbers on that one were actually pretty close. I remember that one very distinctly. Mm. But they got gobsmacked by an Arkansas team who just ran all over them. And that kind of really portended the rest of their season. They were at halftime against Oklahoma. They played a full game's worth of plays against Oklahoma. I think they had almost 24 possessions in that game against Oklahoma. And they... let Caleb Williams come in and beat them. They finished 1-6, including 6 straight losses. 5 of those were by one score. But Grant, I do think we're going to use the Q word. The Texas Longhorns did quit last season. There were, aside from whatever monkey stripper pole nonsense stories were going on off field, there were videos of coaches yelling on the bus. There were Steve Sarkisian basically said most of these guys are not going to be here next year. They knew they were going to have to do some massive shifts of some serious institutional foundations at Texas. And Grant, to its credit, that's what they need. I think we've said that for a while. I think one phrase I've said for a while is someone needed to say, shut up and let me win some games and then we'll figure out everything else. And it looks like Sarkis is trying to do that at the very least. They have the number 5 recruiting class, the number 8 transfer class. They were 86th in EPA per play margin, Grant, 68th on offense, but an abysmal 92nd on defense. In terms of net points per drive, 92nd, 77th in points per drive on offense, 101st in points per drive allowed on defense. Grant, a 44.8% echo ratio, that's 97th in the nation. That means that fewer than one half of all quality possessions in games they played belong to them. Just absolutely a really, really rough scene for Texas in 2021.
Well, and here's the thing too, Parker. Stop me if you've heard this before. That Texas team had a lot of talent on it, especially on offense. We're going to go through it. They had some dudes, maybe even some guys on that roster.
I love how you and I both do guys and dudes. One of them means one thing and one means the other, but I never remember which way.
Me neither. But
either it's like, oh, you're a guy, not a dude, or oh, you're not a dude, you're just a guy.
Yeah, but then there's dogs, and we'll get there. The point is, they had a lot of the good ones on their roster, and they still didn't. Produce a lot of that has to do with the quarterback battle. A lot of that has to do with some shakiness up front. And a lot of that has to do with a defense that really just kind of had some Swiss cheese in, on the back of it. But you look at that roster, you think there's no way that team had the same record as, you know, they should have been 5-7.
I mean, they shouldn't have, but also maybe they should have. Maybe they shouldn't have been 5-7. In the way that they were. I think they shouldn't have been this like dichotomy of 4-1 and then 1-6 down the stretch.
What? Yeah, the only team they beat was West Virginia in that last stretch?
No, they lost to West Virginia. They beat Kansas State. Because Kansas was up and kicked a field goal to turn a one-score lead into a one-score lead. And Texas came back and scored. Also, Will Levis, or not Will Levis, that's the wrong team entirely.
Will Howard?
Oh, what's his...
Skylar Howard.
Golly, Will Howard wishes he was Will Levis. That's probably the only time in the world that anyone has ever confused Will Howard for Will Levis. He played because Skylar Thompson was hurt, and yeah, just some issues there. But, I mean, they won. That's great. Including, Graham, I do want to ask you, my notes here have that Texas lost to Kansas 57-56 in overtime. Is that correct? Can you double-check that for me?
I actually double-checked it, and I wanted to correct you slightly. They lost 57-56 to Kansas in overtime at home. In Austin. Yeah. So I've said this before on this podcast. That game was the biggest like balm for my wounds after watching TCU get their asses handed to them by Oklahoma State. I enjoyed that so much. It was, I think the guy that caught the winning score had not caught a pass before.
Yeah, or scored a touchdown. Got like a deal with Applebee's immediately after. And if I'm not mistaken, that was the same week as Texas Tech kicks a 62-yard donger to beat Iowa State. And then we all flipped over to Kansas, Texas. I think life is a gift, man.
It just hit a lot of distractions. Moments
I feel like I'm Matthew McConaughey. I'm like, yeah, sometimes you're just living.
Yeah, I watched that game in the back. I watched that game in the backseat of a Lincoln on my phone. So yeah, I was embodying McConaughey.
I mean, I don't know where I was, but I definitely crushed a Lone Star flat and tore it to pieces. So,
Parker, I want to get to one thing before we get to losses. You read the third down rate. Did you read the average distance for third down?
Yes. So we're going to talk about the offense.
Okay.
And because that one thing that stuck out. Is Texas on defense or on offense last year, they were 112th in third down rate with Bijan friggin' Robinson as their running back. 112th in third and fourth down conversion rate, Grant. That's 35.37, so barely better than 1 in 3 of third downs they converted. But they had an average distance of 7.05 yards on third down, which is like 71st, like right in the middle of FBS. So they were actively bad based on context. They were actively bad at third down conversions, which is just insane to me when you have Bijan Robinson on the field.
Well, and it's insane to me that they were middle of the pack in distance to go on third down when you have Bijan Robinson on your roster. I mean, we joke about early downs runs all the time, but dude, if you're going to run on early downs, it's a good thing you've got Bijan. Like, do that.
Yeah, let's look at some of their stats and talk about it, because they could have run the triple and maybe done better last year. But it is weird how, I mean, Grant, they were 34th in early down ZPA. So they were moving the ball decently on early downs, and on third downs just absolutely could not get anything done. Maybe that's quarterback positioning. As a result, they were 12th, 75.4% of their first downs came on first and second down. They really were not. If they got to third down, they were getting stopped. They were 97th in echo rate and quality possession rate, but 44th in points per quality possession. That tells you they scored with big plays. They really weren't sustaining drives. They weren't scoring on scoring opportunities. They were only scoring with big plays. 71st in EPA per pass, 65th in EPA per rush. A really, really inconsistent and bad offense.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was struck by reading these stats, is how swing for the fences Texas's offense was last year, which again makes no sense when you have a running back that can chew off 6 or 7 yards a carry. But Hudson Card tried to score on every pass that he threw. Casey Thompson was a little bit more conservative, but they were running big, long play action routes on first and second downs consistently, and they weren't hitting on enough for it to be a solid strategy. You know that me and you both are big fans of trying to go for it on first and second and trying to, you know, throw a haymaker, but they weren't consistent enough to do that. A more conservative play calling might have actually helped Texas last year.
I like that they were, look, we're proponents of slinging it. I don't even know that they were slinging it. I think they were just chucking it.
Yeah.
It's a fine line between slinging it and chucking it. But it's kind of like the baseball player who, you know, you think about like the fat guy, Dan Vogelbach. Played for the Pirates, plays for the Mets now. There's recently some videos of him going around running, big dude. And basically it's like he's going to strike out or he's going to hit it out of the freaking park because he raised his launch angle. Texas is like that guy, except they didn't raise their launch angle. So it's like they're going to get a single or they're going to strike out. And the offense just didn't click in kind of design or execution at all last year. If I look at their game by game, I mean, they had negative EPA in both sides of the ball. I mean, four games there. I mean, just some really bad performances overall. They really bottomed out. Like when they were bad, they were bad. And their defense gave them no leeway at all. So looking and kind of turning our attention to what they're going to do in 2022, knowing, Grant, that the theme of this podcast is eternity begins anew each day.
Mm-hmm.
That they are flipping over everything and kind of rebranding and reopening. Texas returned 62% of production on offense. That's 77th. That includes transfers. But that's kind of by design. That's very low in terms of returning production. Mm-hmm. Grant, talk us through some of these losses that they have, the key guys that they lost.
Yeah, so Derek Kerstetter was a great tackle. He's gone. You have Cade Brewer, who's solid, I guess, tied in. Casey Thompson is off to Nebraska now, where Godspeed and good luck. Two receivers, Joshua Moore and Marcus Washington. I liked Moore than I did Washington, but either way, both those guys are gone. Guard Tope, I'm going to call it Tope Amade. He's gone as well. A couple of those guys were transfers. That would be Moore and Washington. Or at least Washington was. Is Moore a transfer?
Yes, Moore went to USC. Washington followed went to Thompson to
Nebraska. Yep. And then Jared Wiley is now a TCU Horned Frog. So congratulations, Jared, on doing the reverse Gary. I like to think Jared would have committed had Gary not been at TCU. And then now that Gary went to Texas, Jared's like, cool, I can finally go to Fort Worth. And Denzel Okafor, also at guard. So Parker, as you noted, that is 8 of their top 15 snap takers on offense last year are not on the roster anymore.
That's different. That is a lot of difference. And what, 1, 2, 3 of those are offensive linemen?
Yep. Yep.
That's a big deal. Lot of changes overall. But they're kind of building anew. And I think the biggest question comes down to quarterback. Can we start there? Is that okay?
I think we have to. The fact that I think I've said Quinn Ewers' name once so far is pretty astonishing. So yeah, we should probably start talking about the quarterbacks.
Okay, before we even get into like the comparison, because I think we need to get into the comparison. Is there any way in your mind that Hudson Card starts the season as the quarterback?
I think he'll start a couple games. I mean, it is bad. Texas. It is really bad. Unless it's going to be an open competition, and if it is, then Ewers easily should win. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start.
Okay, can I posit to you that if Texas this season is not open competition in every position, what are they doing?
That's a good point.
Be the freaking jungle. It should be, I don't care, best man wins.
Yeah, and when you're that talented as Ewers, and you know that Arch Manning is coming next year, and we don't need to litigate, oh, actually, Arch is fine redshirting here, whatever. If you're Quinn Ewers, like, you want to go ahead and get on the daggum field and start taking some snaps before the next stud comes away. So he's going to be pushing for that starting job as much as he can.
Knowing that Quinn Ewers went early to Ohio State so that he could make NIL money and study offense, like, this was almost like an English Premier League where they like
loan out,
lent a guy, yeah, and then brought him back. Like, then this was going to happen. So I think Ewers is probably the guy here. Probably the going to take the lead. He and Card are kind of similar, but Ewers is just better in kind. Ewers is one of the, you know, best rated recruits of all time. He is like a pro style quarterback who has good enough mobility that it kind of qualifies for a dual threat is the way that I've seen that presented. And the big things that I think are really important are kind of his scouting report says elite improvisational quarterback, senses pressure and knows how to react to it, will take risks, but that's part of what makes him good. Last year, Grant, I think that the Texas quarterback position required a lot of improvisation, required a lot of responding to pressure, and required a lot of risks. And so Quinn Ewers' profile seems to fit pretty well with what Texas had going on last year, even if that's not necessarily the design of what they want this year.
Yeah, I mean, just the improvisation. So I noted last year, and this is something that I think is going to be Texas fans, I think, should be excited to see Ewers over Card in this respect, because Sark really loves running play actions and RPOs and just really things that take a little bit of time to develop in the pocket. And so the offensive line we'll talk about in a minute, but being able to run and make those throws off balance and make those throws downfield on broken plays. So Casey Thompson's not here anymore, but they ran play action on almost half of his snaps. He had 14 touchdowns and 3 picks. That's compared to 10 touchdowns and 6 picks not running play action, and had two more yards per completion when running play action. Hudson Card was straight up a bad play action quarterback. They only ran it on 40% of his snaps. He only had one touchdown. And here's the thing. He had 12.7 was his ADOT on play action compared to 9.8 yards ADOT on non-play action. he's chucking the ball downfield on play action and just hoping to get rid of it and hoping there's a receiver down there. Viewers is going to be a lot better at making plays that are longer to develop and may kind of break apart a little bit than Card ever will be.
Even if you put aside the question of, like, he was pressured last year and that might be different.
No, still, yeah, because Ewers is better throwing on the run. Yeah, like, yes.
Ewers' profile fits better for, I can deal with that chaos.
Yeah.
Grant, if I could find a sports book that would give me the odds that Hudson Card is TCU's starting quarterback for 2023.
We're not doing this.
I would take it. I don't care what the odds are. I would take it.
I don't. I hope that young man has a successful career. I'm good.
At Akron.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. We're going down this. I know you don't want to do this, and I know you explicitly said I don't want to talk about this, but we're going to talk about this. What is Sonny Dykes' made hay doing?
Turning, like, mediocre white guys into pretty productive quarterbacks?
Sonny Dykes. No, specifically turning Texas's trash into treasure. Sonny Dykes is the new colossus of Texas football. Yeah, you didn't think you were going to get an Emma Lazarus reference on the Purple Theory podcast on a Wednesday night, but your boy taught middle school English long enough that we're there.
I lift my lamp along the shining door. I don't remember the exact lines, but yeah.
I mean, he's saying, come on in, come home. I can get you where you need to go. I think that the odds that Hudson Card comes to TCU are very, very high.
Well, Sam Jackson needs someone that's going to carry his Gatorade bottle on the sideline. So if Hudson wants to come do that, he is more than welcome.
Golly, Sam Jackson, I would just, yeah.
Wait for the TCU offensive preview, folks. It is going to be a Sam Jackson fest.
If y'all thought that, like, the Trevon Boykin era was stressful, just wait for the Sam Jackson.
Oh, it is lightning out there. Absolute lightning.
Okay, this is a Texas preview. The big deal here for the quarterback, Grant, is not who plays quarterback. It's what the quarterback has to do in the Sarkisian offense. Can you process well enough to do this? Sark at Alabama had Tua and Mac Jones had, like, elite processing college processing guys, was able to say, hey, you know what's good about offense. I know what's good about offense. Let's work through and let's work through our progression. Let's have multiple options. Let's be versatile. Let's be the Swiss Army knife and kind of do all these back and forth. Shout out to PFF Drill, who's a terrible Twitter account to follow, but a good guy. he screen capped some Orange Bloods kind of insider reports today. And they said there's not been significant movement between Card and Ewers. An on-field source even said Malik Murphy, who has an amazing recruiting highlight, if you know what I'm talking about, looked really, really good. That's because the install is hard, I think. And the biggest question here is, installing Sark's offense to the max with new quarterbacks is very, very difficult. Grant, I know I have some notes here. I know you've looked a little bit. Can we talk about Sark's offense for a minute?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah. So Sarkisian's offense, I think he's the best in the country at pre-snap movement. I think he maneuvers defenders to where they shouldn't be better than anyone else. Now, it depends on the talent that's going to execute. As you said, he had two of the best college quarterbacks in recent memory in terms of processing.
And a whole slew of insane wide receivers.
Yes, and a whole slew of offensive linemen that can also block and give them time. Besides that. I think he's a genius. And Parker, you and I know, are both big fans of his clinic. That it was a Nike clinic, I think, or at least he's wearing a Nike shirt.
It's a coach's clinic. You can find it on YouTube. If you can't find it, DM me. I'm happy to share it. Like, it's 45 minutes that will enlighten you as to modern football offense in a way that no other 45 minutes could.
Exactly. So it's RPO spread based. It's air raid principles. Not afraid to run, which is like the most cliche, like, oh, you know, hey, we'll run it. They'll take it. But they will actively run if you take it. A lot of play action, a lot of RPOs. It's in a lot of mesh, which we talked earlier offline. Hudson Card was actively trying to kill his wide receivers last year in mesh. I'm convinced of it. He threw some balls.
The diplomatic way to say that is Hudson Card really trusted his receivers to make contested catches.
He threw some hospital balls. Oklahoma State was like a bloodbath in that game over the middle. But they ran the hell out of it, and it worked 60% of the time, and the other 40 was nasty.
Life is full of trade-offs, you know? I think the big deal with Sark is not just kind of the principles, which are important, but is that he's so willing to diversify run schemes and pass schemes. In a minute, we'll talk about running backs and talk about like run gap splits and usage and everything, but he's going to get a lot of different looks out there. I think Grant, he knows how to kind of punch, counterpunch, fake counterpunch, and then land a haymaker better than anybody. Sark is like the guy in Princess Bride. You know, I know that you know that I know that you know that I know, to a fault. That's a lot to learn. To use a quarterback, to use a Big 12 media days metaphor, it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose. You might say that Sark's quarterbacks have a fire hose inserted into their mouths.
Can I say, I started a new job in February, as most of you know, and every single person that I would meet would be like, oh, how's your first month? I'm like, oh, it's great. And they're like, man, start drinking from a fire hose around here. I'm like, man, it's not install. Like, I'm just editing. It's not that hard. Anyway, yeah, it's...
How many people are drinking from a fire hose?
I don't know. Like, who does that? Like, I don't understand how that even got started.
That's one of those things, like, no one has an experience of doing. You're just like, yeah, imagine that would be pretty rough.
Yeah, it's like putting lipstick on a pig. It's like, who has tried? Other than a bunch of pledges, I assume. I don't know what you did, but yeah.
So I think that's the big deal here. Is not... Obviously, I think Ewers' ceiling is better and higher, and yes. I think Card is consistent, is fine, but like should get beat out for this job, no problem. Mm-hmm. It should be Ewers. The question is, can Ewers learn the offense? Can Sark install enough to kind of maximize his competitive advantage, which is this kind of counterpunch deal?
Who can say?
It's hard. That's hard with a lot of turnover.
That's really hard with a lot of turnover. Can I tell you what's going to make it easier? The running backs and wide receivers are effing loaded, Parker.
Insane.
I mean,
insane.
Maybe the best running back room in the country? Bijan Robinson, Roschon Johnson, Keelan Robinson?
Hard to argue with those three. I mean, three really solid, really versatile running backs. And the wide receiver room, I think, has a claim as well.
Yeah.
I mean, just very deep and very interesting. One, did you know Tashard Choice is the running back coach in Texas?
But that's awesome.
Georgia Tech, Tashard Choice. That's awesome. Yeah, that's very fun. Bijan and Roschon last year combined for 38 runs of 20 plus yards.
Jeez.
They, you know, if we're talking about kind of the foundations of the Sark offense, it's going to be a little nerdy. They ran slightly more zone, about 66.5% of the time. But a key thing to look at kind of in usage, Roschon last year ran about 42.5% gap schemes. So mm-hmm. when they had Bijan in, they were running zone. When they had Roschon in, they were running more gap. Just a little difference right there. They're not really different in size. I know we've talked about like Texas Tech and who else had Thunder and Lightning?
Baylor is the one.
Yeah, Thunder and Lightning there. It's not really a Thunder and Lightning, but they are kind of like different in kind. Mm-hmm. In the past game, Bijan's ADOT was like one. Just in front of the line of scrimmage. Roschon's was about at the line of scrimmage. And so they were more kind of designed, we're going to get the ball to Bijan in a certain situation and let him run. Mm-hmm. Roschon was a lot more like check down. His longest reception was only 14. Mm-hmm. But he's sturdy there. Grant, if you have two excellent running backs and are trying to jumpstart your offense, what can you do with it?
Man, I think you probably bring in a running back coach that is really good.
I think you bring in somebody who might be the foremost expert on running with two running backs and passing with two running backs. I literally in our podcast notes here, I just have ramble about Brennan.
I had forgotten that he was at Texas until I was researching earlier today. I'm like, oh, Parker's going to be so mad.
Brennan Marion in the last couple of years since I've known him has gone from fringe offensive mind to the architect of the Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addington season. I mean, a really good inside receivers coach, really good passing game coordinator, really knows what he's doing about putting his players in space, kind of altering the geometry on the field. I think this is one of the most compelling storylines in the Big 12 this year, Grant, is what will Brennan Marion bring to Steve Sarkisian's offense that will allow them to incorporate this two-back set in a way that's going to really, really challenge defenses. I think Sark has really, really done well challenging linebackers historically, and you add this kind of wrinkle, I mean, I'm very excited about what they're going to be able to do here.
Listen, if Marion just said, hey, Bijan, go run a wheel route every single play, would that be the worst thing in the world?
That sounds like me playing NCAA 2014 right. or whatever. I mean that's it doesn't not work.
It doesn't not work. And you combine that running game with the wide receiver core, who, as we mentioned, may have like also a claim of being maybe the best in the country. Xavier Worthy's, Isaiah Nair, Jordan Whittington, who I love, Brennan Thompson's back, and some huge transfers as well. I think it's Ajie Hall and Jaleel Billingsley from Alabama. I'm really big on Hall. He got some playing time, but I think that's because Jameson Williams kept getting hurt. But he had two catches in the national championship game. There's studs, dude. There's a lot of studs.
I think Hall and Billingsley are upside guys. I think the passing game, you have to talk about Xavier Worthy. I mean,
yeah.
Xavier Worthy is returning the second highest target share in college football behind Josh Downs at 31.7%. He is one of four 2022 returning guys who've averaged 13 plus average depth of target and 6+ yards after reception. Worthy, Jaden Reed at Michigan State, Zay Flowers at Boston College, Quentin Johnson at TCU. Xavier Worthy leads all of them in yards after catch with 8.5. I mean,
he is
high volume. He is just super impressive. If you look last year at the guys who averaged 29% or more of target share, he is the only one that didn't get drafted because he was a freaking freshman.
Yeah.
And he has another year after this year as well.
He's like 6'1", like 163, and is just like motoring past dudes and also catching over them. It shouldn't be fair what Xavier Worthy's doing, but he is outstanding.
And typically, Grant, I would say, okay, they're going to key in on him this year. Defenses are going to key in on him. But they bring in Isaiah Nair from Wyoming, who has a 28.4% target share, way up there, 20.3 yards per reception, super versatile. He played about a fourth of his snaps in the slot. He can move around, 5.5 yards after catch, 18.3 ADOT. Downfield guy, frees up the top on this offense. Whittington wasn't bad. A lot of his production came in kind of like three games. 14.5 yards per reception, 8 out of 11.8, 6.5 yards after catch. But I think he kind of goes with Hall and Billingsley as, hey, man, you've got these secondary options that could be really interesting. The problem with all three of those dudes, maybe not with Hall, with Billingsley and Whittington is drops. Whittington dropped 13.7 of his targets. Jaleel Billingsley is not at Alabama anymore because he dropped 22.2% of his targets.
Yeah. It's not ideal.
I don't even know if Billingsley is going to play, frankly.
Yeah. I think Hall will. I mean, I think Whittington's going to get more snaps. Honestly, if I were Sarkisian, I'd go back and watch his performance at Cuero in the high school state championship game a couple years ago and say, well, let's just give the ball to this guy. But I think he'll step up a little bit, especially with Moore and Washington out. I think that's a guy that could probably catch a few more balls.
Yeah, no, I think there's opportunities. There's a lot of targets. It's honestly a problem of there are so many guys with so many options, and you're installing so much in offense. Like, can you install enough to maximize all of these guys and really benefit them? I think that's really interesting. Another name, Grant, just to do our due diligence, Jatavion Sanders is a five-star tight end, just an absolute freak, 6'4", 235. Probably going to get, like, Billingsley is more of like a flex wide receiver. I think that Sanders, insofar as Texas uses a passing tight end, which Sark had done at Alabama, I think he will be a guy super involved as well. So if you're watching, I think the big question on offense is, can Steve Sarkisian install enough of his offense to, one, effectively maximize his competitive advantage of that counterpunch? Two, can he manage a quarterback managing that install? That's so much. And then three, can he like diversify enough to maximize what might be like four or five NFL guys between his running backs and his wide receivers? Can he even use all that talent, right?
In the words of the Wu-Tang Financial Group, you need to diversify your bonds. And I think if Sark can keep morale happy in the locker room, and I mean, who the hell knows if we can, but if he can, he could be like, look, like, Xavier, you're not going to catch 8 balls a game because we have so many other talented people, but I promise I'll dial you up one home run play every single game. And if that works, then I think there's a lot of potential here, especially if like Ewers is the chosen one and everyone can rally behind him. There's just so much potential on this offense.
Yeah, his pitch has to be like, look, the NFL doesn't care about your numbers. They understand you're next to NFL talent here. You're going to test well. Just trust the process. Yeah.
Yeah. And we should hop on the offensive line real quick. Last year, Casey Thompson was pressured on 31.2% of his dropbacks. I mean, that's too many dropbacks, Parker.
That's a lot. I'd like for that to be a lot less from Texas this year. One thing that's interesting with the change in quarterback play, overall, Casey Thompson's time to throw was 2.71 seconds, but on pressured dropbacks, it was 3.3, which means the homie was just running around for his life, trying to make something happen, begging for an opportunity to hit those intermediate routes. And that's very funny, but that's also important for this fall, because the deal is, can they actually run Sark's offense? Can they have enough protection with those play action schemes and those slow developing deep routes to actually hit them? Or is the quarterback going to have to run around and try and make something happen? Can they get those secondary options to make sure that a play is not, like you pointed out earlier, 20 plus yards or bust? It's 20 plus yards. Oh, dang, it's not there. Let me take the 5 yards. We'll keep moving.
Yeah. And so the problem is that a few of the guys returning don't necessarily have the best reputation in pass blocking. I mean, Jake Majors at center's pretty good, I think. Junior Angelau, it was all right. But Christian Jones gets back at tackle. He allowed 4 sacks last year and 3 more quarterback hits.
I don't think he's an
You think he's going to start? Who do you think's going to start ahead?
Well, no, I think he'll start. I'm just saying I don't think he's very good.
Yeah, he's not. Hayden Connor probably gets taken to the guard spot. He only took, 30 pass blocking snaps last year and allowed a sack from the guard position. It's not ideal. Christian Jones also had 8 penalties called on him last year at left tackle. Geez.
I think Angelau is pretty good. I think Carrick is okay, but there's reports out of practice that he looks lost right now.
Great.
The offensive line, man, again, we're trying to talk ourselves into this team, and I've talked myself into everything here. The offensive line, I'm just very worried about.
It's going to be the big question.
Because so much of Sark's offense requires this like long developing plays, and I don't know, man, that makes me nervous.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't block for play action, what are we even doing here? And we'll get to it a little bit later, but we solicited Twitter questions, and I think half of the honest responses for Texas were, so the question is up front, can they block or can they not block? And can Quentin Ewers stay upright? Quinn Ewers, not Quentin. I don't know why I said that. I'm gonna call him a lot of names, I'm sure, over the course of the next 4 years of his career, but hopefully not on this podcast. Do you want to talk about the defense, Parker? Because it also wasn't good.
I do. It was pretty bad. It might have been worse than the offense. Grant, we're at like 40 something minutes too, so I want to make sure we don't need to spend an hour on.
Well, we had a 10 minute break, so keep going.
Yeah, well, that's we're at 50 something. So I
oh Jesus Christ! Screw it. It's Texas. Go big or go home.
It's Texas. Grant, BJ Foster has left the building.
BJ's from like 40 minutes where I grew up. I was rooting for him so hard, and he is now at Sam Houston State, which is a fine college. But yeah,
I think I wanted him to be. I perpetually wanted him to be better than he was, and thought he was capable of more than he was. This defense. Let me read some stats about this defense that I haven't read yet. 92nd in EPA per pass, 82nd in EPA per rush. Grant, they gave up 200 rushing yards to 6 opponents. 55.7% of opponent possessions ended in a quality possession. They allowed 4.86 points per Echol, which is 106th in the nation, 85th in field position, 83rd in early downs EPA. Grant, 91st in third and fourth down success. 45.8% of third and fourth down attempts were successful against this Texas defense. It was not good in any way, shape, or form, especially against the rush. Grant, if your run defense is really bad, who's a great person to come in and fix your run defense?
Well, it's not Gary Patterson. I'll tell you that.
It hasn't been Gary Patterson for a couple of years. I do think that'll end up being a fine hire, but man, they got to do something about this run defense.
I don't know. If you're Texas and you just ran through TCU like crap through a tin horn last year, do you want to say, hey, we had a bad run defense, let's bring in the guy we just ran through?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's one of those like, Gary, tell us what you would do and we'll do the opposite.
Right.
Initial reports I've heard, though, have been that he's been really good for kind of being an intermediary in the hallways between PK, the defensive coordinator, and the players. So I don't know if it's going to have a huge influence, but they clearly need to do something with this run defense. I mean, they gave up – the only teams they held to negative run EPA were Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech. Everybody else was positive in run EPA. And if you know anything about EPA and about running, it's, you know, most runs are negative value.
Right.
And so to give up positive value for 9 of your 12 games is pretty rough.
It's not good. Okay, we disagree on this. I think maybe about the potential of one of these players. I think the crucial weakness at Texas the last couple of years has been at linebacker. I'm sure DeMarvin Overshone's a fine guy. I think he stinks.
I think he stinks in the inside. I think he stinks playing as a run-stopping inside linebacker.
He missed 20% of his tackles last year, and when he was in pass coverage, he allowed an 89% catch rate.
Yeah, but you don't want him in pass coverage.
I don't want him tackling if he's going to miss 20% of them.
I think he's moving to this outside linebacker. I think he's going to be much more of like a pressures kind of at the line guy because they're playing that 3-3 and moving around. I don't know that he's a guy. So what I initially wrote in my notes and that you and I went back and forth on was he's the guy. Mm-hmm. And I think I've changed that to he's the crux.
I think that's
if
fair.
He can move to outside linebacker and be a productive linebacker there, that really helps them a whole lot. He and Brockmeyer combined for 108 tackles last year. Like, they were involved on every play, just about. And so I think that he's super important, and I think a position change will really, really help him.
I think so, too. He's not a bad pass rusher. I'll give him that. Two slacks.
Yeah, what, he was like fourth in pressures or something?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, tied for third in pressures. And he only pass rushed 37 times, depending on how you know, calculate all that. So he's not a bad pass rusher. And they bring in two guys, they bring in Diamonte Ducker-Torsey from James Madison, and Jalen Ford will also play.
So Brockmeyer's hurt, recovering. Yeah. I don't know when he'll play, but Jalen Ford will take that spot. Tucker Dorsey from James Madison should play immediately, and Overshawn will be outside.
Yeah. That's fine.
That feels like the...
It can't be worse.
Well, Grant, what's the core tenet of the... What's the central axiom of the Prince Purple Theory podcast is...
It can always get worse.
But I do think that given what was wrong with Texas last year on defense, this is a fine plan to try and remedy that.
I think that's fair. And I think they're going to be bolstered too up front. Like I said, like you have in your notes, they return your top five leading rushers, including Overshown, and all four starters along the defensive line. Those guys are good. Alfred Collins, Kondra Coburn, Mora Ojomo, and Obi Okwuofo. I should have checked. And I like Tavondre Sweat as well as a rotation guy. I'm a big fan of his. And a lot of those guys are like Big 12 honorable mention. Guys are like, okay, had decent years last year, but they're going to need to step up. I think two or three of them will. And I think the first four will be a strength for Texas.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And as Overshawn kind of moves in that linebacker role, what happens to Ovi? I don't really know. I'm not going to pretend to know the nuances there. But just know, like, they have a lot of options. And last year they didn't really have as many. It doesn't feel like they had as many options for kind of making this defense work. All I care about with that front seven, Grant, is the run defense has to get better.
Yeah.
It has to. They are not going to function if it's so similar to TCU last year. They're not going to function if you're giving up 200 yards to everybody who has a pulse.
Yeah. What, six opponents, 300 twice? I think one of those is Arkansas and they ran through everybody, but still, I mean, that is abysmal.
It was Arkansas and Oklahoma. It's like understandable, yeah. But dude, if you're going to be Texas this fall, you need to be giving up 150, 180 to Arkansas and Oklahoma, not, you know,
280. Yeah.
300.
Again, Alabama, second week of the season. Mark your calendars. On the back end, Parker, B.J. Foster's gone, RIP. Ryan Watts comes in from Ohio State at corner. That's a nice addition there. Deshaun Jameson is back after really being the only consistent guy. Am I right there?
I don't even know. I mean, he was bad.
Yeah.
He had a 70% completion rate, but he, like, was put on an island. I mean, what can you do? It's kind of – he's not this bad. Don't hear me saying that. But it's kind of like C.J. Caesar where it's like
no.
He did the best that I would expect anyone – in that position to do. I mean, yeah, I just don't know what else you're asking of that guy. And so with Watts on the other side, I think the pressure comes off Jameson a little bit, and maybe systematically they won't be covering up for weaknesses. He might get a little more help. Yeah.
Anthony Cook had a decent season last year as well. He's kind of a versatile guy. He played some corner. I think he can play some safety too.
I think the crux here for me, kind of talking about linebackers, I think that's totally right. Is Jahdae Barron.
Jahdae Barron?
Again, working off Barron. The writing here. I don't know. But he's from Pflugerville. He was recruited as a corner, and specifically his scouting report said he's got a lot of positional flexibility, and he's going to be that nickel. He's going to be kind of that LeKendrick Van Zandt role for TCU fans. And so he'll be in between kind of that corner and linebacker, but not quite a safety. I think he'll be really, really helpful. Kind of he's grown up, he's switched positions and played safety there. I think that he'll be a guy that will really kind of bolster this back end and give them, again, the whole deal there is you just don't want anyone on an island. If you can kind of get these redundancies or contingencies going, the defense is going to be better. And I think they're going to have some of these contingencies.
Yeah. I mean, like adding depth with Watts is huge. And then again, just more guys that can rotate through on the defensive line is going to be a big benefit. Parker, can I read you my favorite stat about the Texas defense?
I'd love to hear it.
Defensive lineman Alfred Collins's major, Human Dimensions of Organizations.
I don't even...
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't
human
know.
Human Dimensions... No, okay. I can't abide that. I have to Google that. I don't know if we have a segment to fill this or whatever. Human Dimensions... of organizations. No, it's real. UT Austin. It came up on Google. What the hell?
And he's a smart guy. He was a National Honor Society member in high school.
Okay, it's the first program of its kind in the nation, drawing upon an innovative combination of liberal arts, behavioral sciences, and social sciences, HGO. That's what us in the business call it, HGO. Was designed to meet a need not addressed by existing education options, providing a deep understanding of people, the key components of any organization. Grant, this is... Oh, I am stopping myself from saying some insane things about this.
This is the liberal education system at its finest, Parker. What happened to hard science?
HGO is the assistant to the general studies teacher.
All right, Parker, do we want to do before
I say
anything?
I don't know. If you know anything about this, DM me. I would love to hear about it. I don't mean to actually like
poop. Yeah, it actually sounds interesting. The buzzwords were amazing. Okay.
Connectivity.
Do you want to do synergy? Do you want to do schedule first or predictions first from our Twitter audience?
Let's do predictions first because I think also you have to pull up the notes because we've predicted all of Texas's conference.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
I don't believe any of those after what I've talked to here. Honestly, we might do it. We might do it without looking at what happened in the past.
But I'm fine with that.
Let's do Twitter. I can read those if you're pulling up the notes.
Okay, yeah, do that.
We plan this. This is a very professional organization. All right, so I asked today just some Texas previews, predictions, and all of that. In no order, I'm just going to read these. J.D. Moore says, the big question for Texas this year is, what is the lowest scenario that Sarkisian can go without getting fired? I'm struggling to see Texas stay patient if he misses another bowl, loses to Kansas again. But does 6-6 with the, quote, meh, M-E-H, end quote, wins, keep him another year?
I think it kind of depends on how good Quinn is. Like, if Quinn shows a bunch of signs of development, I think you give Sark one more year to play with him.
He also has recruited really well, done transfer portal really well. He also hasn't done what a lot, like Tom Herman did this. Remember when Tom Herman fired all of his coordinators and they got fired this year?
I do.
Sark can still fire the coordinators. He's definitely got at least one more year at the very worst case scenario. So, friend of the pod, Yell MK, says that they need to beat Kansas.
Well, that's step one.
The strength of Texas is that they have a very cool city, which I think is up for debate. It's very crowded. There's some cool things there. And the weakness is that if the TCU defense is being implemented, might be the weakness for Texas this year. I think we touched on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if, like, as you said, it's not opposite day in Austin. It may be a bad time for them.
Yeah. Friend of the podcast, KSU fan. Says, I think that they're a legitimate contender for Arlington. They have a really good returning playmaking production, for sure. And it may come down to if viewers can live up to the hype. Jimmy, once again, you and I are just, we're seeing eye to eye. That's beautiful. RCJ Graves says the biggest obstacle is being Texas. The biggest weakness is being Texas. But he says that they're going to go 6-6.
That seems a little negative to me. I'm higher on Texas. And as I'm comparing these notes, I think you and I are both higher on Texas. So
I'm scrolling through some of these and kind of filtering out some. K-Statriot says, I expect that Texas will not live up to the hype. AB at Abikira. Bikira?
Who can say?
Friend of the pod, interacts a bunch. Sorry that I can't pronounce your last name. I've only seen it in writing. There's nothing to suggest that this will be some sort of breakout year. 9-win team at best, and I'm thinking 7 or 8.
I think that's especially with their knock. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
That's pretty reasonable. Shout out to Kevin Fielder at the Kevin Fielder, who just took that opportunity to dunk on them for losing to Texas. TM Wish at Bearhunter 90 says 7-5 seems reasonable. Maybe 9-3 if everything goes exceptionally well. Plus one, liking that. Mm-hmm. But they could also lose 7 games if the O-line has any injuries. That's something we didn't explicitly talk about. O-line is thin. Mm-hmm. D. Duncan Soul says line plays the biggest question mark, but the idea that new QB is always better might be hard. Crazy Alex says minimum of 8.
Okay.
That's a new one. Aggie Mark says 9-3. That's coming from an Aggie.
Jeez, so Aggie Mark. You're losing your edge, bud. What's happening?
At K Ford Ratings, friend of the pod, says question marks Quinn Ewers. He has them projected at 8.3 overall wins, 6.3 conference wins, to which I say, Kelly, you can't win 0.3 of a game.
Well, Texas can try. Texas won. Texas won a third of the Oklahoma game last year.
If anyone can. The attack sheet says expectation is 11-1. The biggest obstacle is they won't score enough. The biggest strength is the offense. And then CF Punk says, again, O-line is the obvious problem. They're very young, not a ton of depth. And he thinks that Billingsley will prove to be the best and most important portal transfer, which would be interesting. Ooh. From how we've kind of seen the offense, because that probably means that Billingsley is playing like a big wide receiver, like a big slot. And not actually tight end. So if Billingsley like has a breakout year, that could go a long way. I think there's one more here. Do you have anything on Billingsley? Sorry.
No. I was just nodding in agreement.
Yeah. Praz Francis, who I think is a Baylor person, but he's all right. It's fine. Is he a Baylor person? Yeah, he is. Hashtag Sikkim in the bio every time. My prediction for UT is that they're 4-1 and ranked heading into Red River, expectations build, and then some losses in the pivotal 4-game stretch after that, OU, ISU, OK State, KSU, turn things toxic, which is exactly what happened last year. So, some common themes there with Texas, yeah. Some snark, that's fine. Interesting array of opinions. If I didn't read yours, I'm sorry, I'm only a man. There are so many there, but,
Well, here's the deal, Parker. I've crunched the numbers. Both of us are really high on Texas.
Do we both have like Texas going 7-2 in conference or something?
We'll get to it, because the sad part is the only game we haven't predicted is TCU yet. But let's get there. So start the season at home for University of Louisiana Monroe Warhawks. I believe that'll be a win for Texas.
The Terry Bowden Classic. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Then Bama. God, why on earth would you even bother?
Bama at 11 a.m. sounds like, you know, people do these extreme sports of like land kayaking or whatever bullshit.
Yeah.
That sounds like land kayaking where you're like, you aren't having fun doing this. You're not improving your cardiovascular fitness by any difference than you would by doing anything else. You're just doing this to hurt yourself. 11 a.m. in Austin hosting Alabama on September the 10th sounds terrible.
It's like, you know, fantasy football, like punishments for last place. Like my league runs the beer mile, which is like fun. Like, hey, you drink beer and run, and people laugh at you. But there's ones where it's like, hey, go take the ACT. And it's like, dude, like, I'm going to sit in this room for 6 hours with a bunch of children and take a test about stuff I forgot 8 years ago. No. At 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. No one's
having fun here.
No one's having fun. Bamba wins. UTSA at home. Scrappy. Potential loss.
It's so early, and I want to, and Grant, there's this phenomenon that a lot of bettors will be in tune to, is like the week after you play Alabama, you get walloped.
Yeah.
You might win, but you get walloped. They're going to get walloped. So I don't think they're going to actually use to UTSA, but buddy, they're going to Lubbock next week.
Well, here's the deal. So I'm calling it a loss to UTSA. Here's where we run into problems. You have Texas going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins, not counting TCU, in the Big 12 alone. And I have them with 7.
Dang. Okay, so we both have them winning Texas Tech.
West Virginia. Losing to Oklahoma. Beating Iowa State. Beating Oklahoma State. You have them losing to Kansas State.
Okay, I'm fine. I was going to say one of those two. They're going
to and it's, I have them beating Kansas State. Yeah.
That stretch right there is an ass kick.
Yeah, because Texas starts.
No, they don't have a bye. That's one.
No, they do. It's the 29th.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row. And they go Alabama, UTSA, Texas Tech, at Texas Tech, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Iowa State, at Oklahoma State, at Kansas State. That is ass kicking. That is hard.
There's a bye in between Oklahoma State and Kansas State.
Oh, there is. Okay, so Oklahoma State, 7 games.
Still. Which is why I have them beating Kansas State, because they're coming off a bye. And then TCU.
That's fair.
I would love to win this game.
Can I give a hot take?
Sure.
TCU is going to beat SMU in Dallas and beat Texas at home.
You've taught me into it.
Or excuse me, in Austin. Or they're going to lose both of those.
You've taught me into it. TCU's winning it. That didn't take very much effort. And then beat Kansas and beat Baylor. So I have them at... I added another loss because of UTSA. So I have them at 8-4, and so do you.
Yeah, and we're just swapping out the UTSA loss for a conference loss. I think that, man, I want to believe the talent at the skill positions, Grant, is so high. It's so good.
This could be 10-2 really easy.
It's so easy to see this being an Alamo or Sugar Bowl team. It's so easy to see them being the second team in the Big 12 championship. I think that a couple things work against them. One, we talked about the install on the offense. The potential is there, but man, it's really hard to learn all that shit.
Yeah.
Right? Two, the schedule. Dude, that 7-game stretch at the beginning is so rough. And along the offensive line, their margin for error is so thin. Those dudes are going to be beat down.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they're going to play, again, really tricky Kansas State, motivated TCU, Baylor, who under Dave Aranda is not going to quit on the season. No. Right? Like that is going to be... A game, regardless of what Baylor season is. That's so tough at the end.
And we joke, but like at Kansas, I mean, it's not a guarantee.
We're riding for Kansas over 3, man. That third win's got to come somewhere. Over 2.5, excuse me.
Over 2, yes. Come on, don't hamstring us. 2.5. Parker, we have successfully previewed all non-TCU teams in the Big 12. Is there anything that you have to say about the Texas Longhorns?
If I, in my heart, pretend they're not the evil empire, I feel good about what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
But the issue that's so different with, like, Dave Aranda at Baylor, which we talked about last week, it feels like you're trying to run a company of 200 people at Baylor or run a company of 200,000 people at Texas. Mm-hmm. Feels like there's just so many more things that could go wrong, so many malcontents. I feel like the variance bars are just a lot wider because it's so much harder at Texas to do that. But we've long said Texas needs somebody to come in and crack skulls. I think Sark's doing that. He turned over the roster. This year, I don't expect them to be the final form of what Texas is doing, but they really should be on the rise this year. This should be the year before the year if Texas is on track. And again, they've done a lot of the right moves. Will they work out? We don't know. But I think that this offseason, they've done the right things. They've recruited a billion offensive linemen. They're paying the offensive linemen to be there. They know that's a weakness long term. That might snake bite them this year. But if that snake bites them this year, I don't know you can necessarily count Sark out long term because he knows that's a weakness.
I think if you want to put in a Heisman bet for Quinn Ewers in 2023, that's probably not a bad idea. I think with the talented offensive lineman coming in, I think that the receivers that still are probably going to be around, if they keep Sark and still have the offensive mind, but that's 2023. In 2022, like I said, the potential's there for 10, maybe 11, probably not 11.
I think Ewers is like 50-1 at Heisman right now.
Yeah, put not 20 bucks on it. Put 20 bucks on it. Next, see what you can get for next year. Is what I'm saying. If it does markets,
yeah, I think the future bet is a lot smarter.
Yeah, absolutely. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. You can find Parker on Twitter at Stats of War and on the Bet US Show, which airs when and where.
Noon Central. On YouTube, you just search BetUS College Football Show on YouTube, find it, subscribe. I don't want to explicitly say that I get a monetary incentive if we hit 5,000 subscribers, but I will say I'll buy beers if we hit for 5,000 subscribers. So like and subscribe. Again, not only I know you guys don't want to hear more of me, but Gary and Kyle are super smart, so check that out as well. That'll start up next week for the season. And then, Grant, we get to talk about TCU coming forward. That's great. We do our summer preview series, but I'm ready to actually talk about TCU, and that's going to happen.
I know. I'm jacked. Next week will be the TCU offense. Then we'll do TCU defense after. And then, Parker, we got to preview Colorado. It'll be game day.
Yeah. If you're at Colorado, DM me. Grant and I will come to your tailgate and drink a beer.
I will shake your hand and drink your beer. I can almost guarantee it. You could DM me on Twitter, at Grant McGalliard, spell like it sounds, with all those vowels. Until then, until next week, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast, and go Frogs.
Go Frogs.